This is As a Matter of Faith, a program presenting an array of religious scholars and leaders discussing significant and current matters of religious interest. As a Matter of Faith is produced in the studios of WUSM Public Radio at the University of Southern Mississippi with the support of the College of Arts and Letters, the School of Mass Communication and Journalism, and the Department of Philosophy and Religion. Your host for As a Matter of Faith, Dr. Alan Eichelman.
Yes, and welcome to As a Matter of Faith. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Eichelman, from the Department of Philosophy and Religion here at the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg. And we have in our studios today Rabbi Uri Barnea, who is the rabbi of Congregation B'nai Israel right here in Hattiesburg. Welcome, Rabbi Barnea. It's good to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Rabbi Barnea has a very, very interesting story that I'd like to have him share with you today. Rabbi Barnea actually grew up in Israel. And Rabbi Barnea, why don't you talk to us a little bit about that and how your family came to Israel and when they came to Israel and what it was like growing up in Israel when you grew up in Israel?
Very well. Well, my parents they're both deceased now, but they were refugees from the Holocaust. They both came from Germany. They actually met on the refugee boat that took them. They got out actually in the nick of time when you could still buy your way out of Germany before the final solution was instituted. They got out in September of 1940. That's a whole year after the war actually broke out. And about 5 years after the Nuremberg laws, that forbade Jews to serve in any state employment, including university professorships and any sort of state employment as a clerk and whatever. And so somehow they managed. My mother was a nurse, and she was a hospital nurse, and she was very needed. My father had a tobacco shop, and he was well-to-do and had a lot of friends among the Germans. And for a while they could protect him, but eventually they came and said, "We can no longer protect you. You better get out, as you know, before it's getting too late." My mother's family, unfortunately, all was murdered in Auschwitz. My father's family actually managed to escape, his mother and another brother, in 1934 to Palestine, one brother to Buenos Aires, and a sister to France, and her tracks were completely lost. We never heard back from her after the war. We don't know what happened to her. So I grew up actually in slightly pre-independent Israel. I was a child, a very tender child, during the independence war. I still remember the airplanes, the Arab airplanes hovering over us, sometimes snatched during the night and brought into the underground shelters. I remember the rationing of the food. For weeks, sometimes we had to eat Quaker oats, brown sugar, and corned beef. That's all the food that we had. And that was quite a challenging childhood. But, I grew up really with the very beginnings of the state, and I saw how the desert started to bloom and how the enthusiasm of the people who arrived at their homeland after 2,000 years of exile related to it, even though the circumstances that brought many of them were very unfortunate once they really came back and they started their lives anew. And that exactly happened with my parents as well.
As you grew up, you developed two loves, I understand. Could you tell us a little bit about those two loves?
Yes. First of all, just to say that my family as a whole was very musical and is very musical. Both my parents played the piano, and my father also played the violin. My uncle, who was killed in Auschwitz, was actually a professional musician, an organist, a saxophonist, clarinetist, oboist. He played a lot of instruments. And in fact, an interesting episode, he played in the Auschwitz Orchestra. If you watch the movie Playing for Wonderful Time with Vanessa Redgrave, and you saved this orchestra of the Jews who had to play the music for those who marched into the crematoria. He was in that orchestra, and then of course he was put to death as well. My sister plays the classical guitar, my brother plays the piano. I started the violin at age 10. I showed musical gift from tender age, and I've been in music for many, many years. And also as a young boy, I started to really love religion and biblical studies and things like that. I was always fascinated by those two branches.
So you continue that love affair to this very day.
Absolutely. I still play the violin. I sing. I don't do music professionally anymore, but that was my first career. For over 30 years, I was in music. I earned a PhD from the University of Minnesota and a master's. I earned the bachelor degree in Israel and Jerusalem from the Reuben Academy of Music in conjunction with the Hebrew University, where I took biblical studies and archaeology.
Yeah, and you studied under some incredible archaeologists and professors of biblical study there at the Hebrew University.
Absolutely.
In Jerusalem.
Some of the greatest minds and scholars, Shmayahu Talmon, Menachem Haran, Eliezer Schweid. If any of you who listen and know of those names or encounter them, you know, because when I was in a seminary in Cincinnati, the Hebrew Union College, and I mentioned to some of my professors the name, they just couldn't believe it. He said, you know, you really studied with the greatest of the great. It's amazing. And for me, it was just, well, these were the teachers, and yeah. I just happened to be at that time.
And Hebrew Union College is known for its excellence in
Absolutely.
Terms of its teaching staff.
Absolutely.
So to impress those professors, the folks that you have studied with had to be pretty impressive,
Absolutely.
To say the least.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, you say, well, I just happened to study with Einstein, you know, or with Freud. You know?
Yeah.
It's quite incredible.
One of my acquaintances in Detroit was Ed Sein, who is the senior rabbi at Temple Beth El in Bloomfield Hills. I had a church up in Bloomfield Hills back in the 90s, and I know that Ed used to teach at Hebrew Union College. I don't know if you're familiar with him at all. But
in Cincinnati or in New York or Los Angeles?
In Cincinnati.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was always very impressed with his degree of scholarship.
Yes. Well, you know, I just came very lately to the seminary.
By the time you came to the seminary, it was already up in at Temple Beth El.
Yeah.
But I could imagine that you must have had some pretty impressive folk that you were studying with at a relatively early age.
Yes. And when I studied with them, no one told me that they were the greatest of the great, but I could sense. I mean, they were just fabulous minds and the publications that they put out and everything. I was very fortunate.
And another thing that we were talking about is you were an officer in the Israeli Army.
Yes. I actually was recruited to the Air Force, but I never really wanted to be in the Air Force. I wanted to be on the ground, and I wanted to join actually a commando unit. And what happened was that I had a friend who was already in this commando unit, and somehow I managed to convince him to kind of have some help behind the scenes to move me. Eventually, I was successful, and so I was in this commando unit for about half of my service, about a year and a half. Then I went to officer course. I parachuted 5 times, and I became eventually an officer, first, second lieutenant, and eventually lieutenant. I could have continued even higher. My brother, for example, is a captain. I just ended as lieutenant. I didn't want to go really further because I wanted to...
Did you see any service like during the first Gulf War or the first, Sinai War?
Well, you talk about 56? In 1956,
there was 1967.
I was already a young officer in the 67. I was on the Syrian border actually in the 67 war. That was my sector anyway. It was my sector during all my military service from 61 to 71. So I was very familiar with all the territory, and I was always assigned. My unit was already stationed there, both for our maneuvers, but also during the war. And in fact, one really interesting episode is that I got a very important visitor to my post. You know, that was still in the Israeli side before we started to cross into Syria and capture the Golan Heights, and that was the grandson of Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill III was writing a book at the time. It's still out. You know, if you go to Amazon, you can find it. And he was going, you know, across the country to interview Israeli soldiers. And I just got lucky for him to come and had a conversation with them. They were looking for someone who could speak English. My English was fairly good already then. And so I had a wonderful interview with him.
Incredible. It's just incredible. And then eventually you found your way to this country in the early 70s, and you started studying at the University of Minnesota.
Yes. My original plan was really just to continue to study here, because in Israel at the time you could only do graduate school in musicology with this research or in performance, not in composition, not in conducting. So I knew I would have to go elsewhere, but I never intended to stay here. When people ask me, when did you move here? I say, I actually never moved here. I went back to Israel in the early 70s, actually for 12 years, between 71 and 84, something like that. 8 times I went back to Israel to find work as a conductor, and I could not find it because it is such a small country, first of all. They only had 7 orchestras altogether. And at that time, there was a huge wave of immigrants from Russia. That came when the Soviet Union finally opened the doors for Jewish immigrants to emigrate from Russia, and many of them were musicians who themselves could not really find work. So what I decided to do, I came back and completed my master's. I went back to Israel. I couldn't find it. I started my PhD. I went back to Israel, etc. Finally, I finished my PhD. I started to get job offers. I eventually met my wife. We got married and eventually decided that it's not going to happen. I'm probably going to stay here. So I, more or less stayed because of inertia, not because of any particular intentions. You see, I also came here as as what I would call maybe an emissary or a helper, because the Jewish Agency wanted to have more Israelis sent to the United States after 67 to increase the ties or strengthen the ties. And so the Jewish Community Center in Minneapolis hired me as a music director. And I thought, well, I'll do that because I didn't have the money to come here, and so it was a source of income. But at the same time, I said to them that originally I really wanted to continue my studies, and I said, fine, just, if you don't mind, the first 3 months don't work, just don't study, just, learn really your work, and after that, take as many courses as you can. So I did, and so I was really kind of part-time graduate student because I had a full-time job. And so it took me 3 years to finish my PhD in 74. It took me 3 more years to get my PhD, but already 9 months after I came, I became the assistant conductor of the University of Minnesota the Symphony and Chamber Orchestra, and that helped me too.
You've certainly had a varied career and a very interesting one. And one of the things we're going to do after a short break is we're going to be talking about then your journey from your career in music to the rabbinate.
Fine.
And we're going to be talking a little bit about what led you to make the decision to become a rabbi and some of the surprises and challenges that you now find with being a rabbi, and maybe a little bit about how some of this also corresponds with what other faith traditions, such as Christianity, are experiencing in the same time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So let's look forward to that when we come back from break, and when we'll be talking once again on As a Matter of Faith with Rabbi Uri Barnea.
You are listening to As a Matter of Faith. This week's guest is Rabbi Uri Barnea. Please share your comments and suggestions with us by emailing us at wusm@usm.edu. This is episode number 4 of As a Matter of Faith.
We're in the WUSM studios with Rabbi Uri Barnea, from the Rabbi of the Congregation B'nai Israel in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. We've been talking to Rabbi Barnea about his career as a musician, as a conductor and a composer, and we're going to be talking now about how that shifted all of a sudden, and he made the shift to towards the rabbinate. And so let's talk a little bit about that, Rabbi Barnea. Welcome back again. And
thank you.
Tell us a little bit about how you came to the decision to move from a career in music into a career in the rabbinate. And you were talking to me just previously as we walked into the studio about some very actually disconcerting situations that were occurring in Billings, Montana, where you were last served as a musical conductor.
That's correct. That's correct. Before we do that, perhaps let me just give a very fast, brief survey here. If you remember, at the very beginning, I also said that my second love really was religion, biblical studies, and when I studied for music in Jerusalem in the academy, I also studied at the same time at the Hebrew University Biblical Studies, when we talked about those great minds of biblical research and so forth. So that was another love of mine, and sort of in the background, I always wanted to do something more in that field. And I think just by natural inertia, when I started to join congregations and so forth, I always lent myself to help the congregation. So when they needed a lay leader, I agreed to do that. When some of the teachers in the religious school or Sunday school or whatever couldn't do it, I said, sure, I'll do it. You know, when they needed someone to chant because they didn't have a canto, I said that. I even officiated over some funerals before I became a rabbi, just as a member of the congregation, because I felt part and I felt that if I can help, I should help. That, you know, and it was no problem for me. In fact, I enjoyed doing it and being of service. I taught violin, I taught conducting, I also taught as a classroom teacher. So I really always worked with people. In the military, I worked with people, and I like to work with people. So from that point of view, you know, as a conductor, you work with people. So, you know, as a conductor, you're a leader, and you're standing in front of a group of people, right? The orchestra. In the congregation, you're also a leader, and you stand... You're a spiritual leader, but as a conductor, you're also kind of spiritual leader because you interpret the music as a conductor of music of a dead composer. You're another representative of that composer and say, here is what I think it should sound like. It's just like the preacher who says, you know, this Bible was written, you know, 2,000 years ago, but here is, I think, what you need to think about it. So again, you know, this being in front of the people was not a different experience altogether. As a teacher, I stood in front of the class. As a conductor, I stood in front of the orchestra. And now I stand, of course, in front of the congregation and work with them and continue to teach in the Sunday school. So, you know, while toying with this idea, I had a very rewarding musical career. I went over the world. I conducted in Russia, in London, in Switzerland, in Canada, over 30 orchestras in the United States, coast to coast. And I had a very rewarding career. And I said, Uri, you know, if you ever want to do a little bit more in the field of religion and Judaism, when are you going to do it? And so I kind of looked at the watch, but, you know, it just happened that we just started family at the time. And in the early 90s, my children were very small, and I didn't have the heart nor the desire to really leave my wife and two children alone. And I knew that I would have to wait a little bit until they're a little bit older. But that was the kind of the positive thing about it. The negative thing that you started to mention was a wave of racism or racist activities in Billings, and, you know, in general, the Northwest, Idaho, Wyoming, Washington, Oregon are known, and Montana are known as sort of a haven for white supremacist, Aryan Nation, neo-Nazis, skinheads, and you name it. I mean, you can talk about whatever you want. And there were a lot of activities, but that particular year with this escalation with flyers over cars until a beer bottle was tossed in my door. Another brick was thrown at a window of another Jewish family. Swastikas were painted on houses of Indians in the South Side and whatever. It was horrible. And actually, the Billings Gazette was very cooperative. What they did was during the time of Hanukkah, they published a whole page with a menorah as a symbol of light, and asked all the citizens of Billings to post it in the windows as a solidarity with the Jewish people, and about 3,500 of them did. And then stones were, you know, thrown in their homes, and more cars were broken, and the electronic billboard of the Catholic school was shot because it says, happy Hanukkah to our Jewish friends and things like that. That was a horrible experience. And then I said to myself, you know, first of all, I'm not going to leave Billings as they want me to, just because if I do that, I budge to their philosophy. I'm not going to cooperate. I'm going to stay right here. But at the same time, I thought, maybe this is the time to really think of doing something more for my people, something more for the cause of civil rights and against anti-Semitism and all of that. So it was a combination of these positive experiences that I had as a love for religion and Bible on one hand, with a negative experience on my own skin and my family, that pushed me eventually to that field And that was combined with some, you see, I've been 20 years conductor and music director in Billings and 14 years of the Montana Ballet Company that is based in Bozeman. But we started to have some differences in philosophy. There were some severe budget cuts that really didn't go along with my own philosophy. So I said, you know, now my kids are older. I always wanted to go to that field. Now it's really the right time.
So it was all sorts of different factors.
Absolutely.
Coming together.
Yes.
At an apropos period of time.
I think so.
And all of a sudden, you're thinking to yourself, what can I do to really stand against hate as a man of faith? And the way I'm going to stand against hate as a man of faith is to take rabbinical orders.
Well, that was one of the ways.
Yeah.
I could have joined, let's say, the RAC, which is called the Religious Action Committee in Washington, D.C., or a variety of things. But I love to work with people. I served already as a lay leader in our congregation. I knew the liturgy. I can sing. I led a lot of things. It was really quite natural to me. I love study the Bible and the Jewish text. And I thought, I think that is really the course that I ought to take and this way serve not only my own people, but also the community in which I live. I mean, this is one example, okay? You invite me for an interview. I go to churches. I speak to them about Judaism, about what I do. I go to youth groups and variety. And that is very important, that we communicate with each other, that we understand each other. And the religious freedom that we have in the United States really affords someone like me to do that.
Well, you know, the thing is that I find fascinating, too, and just to give you folks out there somewhat of a idea of Rabbi Barnea's incredible precociousness, I guess is the term to use here, is he managed to do a five-year degree, graduate degree, at Hebrew
Union
University.
Hebrew Union College
in Cincinnati, which is one of the most stringent theological programs in the country. They grant an MDiv, but it's the equivalent in every way of a PhD. And he was able to do that in 3 years. It gives you some idea of his precociousness and his tremendous intellectual ability. And upon completing that degree, he is here now as a rabbi for is it a year and a half now?
Yes, just a year and a half. And that was by coincidence, too, because obviously I tried to find a congregation a little bit closer to my family. My wife and our son, who is now at the senior class in high school still, are still in Montana, in Billings. So this is a long commute. I tried to find, there were some congregations in Idaho, in Colorado, and some other places. But for some reason, they closed even before my placement. So there were no congregations in that part of the country, and eventually I ended up with all the openings for a solo rabbi only in the South. I was a finalist in Wilmington, North Carolina, Hot Springs, Arkansas, Naples, Florida, Dothan, Alabama, and Hattiesburg, Mississippi. The first congregation I went to was actually Dothan, Alabama, but they couldn't get their congregation assembly to decide before Memorial Day. And they knew that 3 years later I go to interview in Hattiesburg. And actually the night when I came back to Cincinnati from Hattiesburg, I got the call and they asked me if I wanted the job. It is mine. So we agreed, and that is why I'm here. And well, I love it. I love everything about it.
We're very glad you're here, and we're very fortunate to have you here, I might add. So, and I'm sure the people of your congregation are absolutely delighted and enthused. I know that one of my colleagues and friends, Dr. Mark Wagner, who unfortunately now is at LSU,
right,
was actually on the search committee that brought you to Hattiesburg. And I think Dr. Wagner made an excellent choice, I'll just put it that way. So we're very delighted that you are here.
Thank you.
What are some of the surprises and some of the challenges that you have found in being a rabbi?
Well, I wasn't a spring chicken, really, so to speak, because we already talked about it. I mean, I had about 30 years or so of conducting and teaching and military, and so I worked with people in a variety of things. So a lot of the surprises that someone who is really young, I already had under my belt. And I know, I mean, with working with people, it's always challenging, but it's also very rewarding. I always like to work with people. I like the challenges. So if you have challenges, if you have disagreements, if you have a variety of situations, situations where you have to be very diplomatic and very careful in how you handle a situation. It was not like my very, very first experience. I really have built on my experience, and we all make mistakes, but, you know, I hopefully and fortunately, I think I also learned from my mistakes and built on them and tried to do things better and kind of count what did not, go right in, you know, in the previous occasion and so forth. It's still, you know, a matter of I love the Jewish text. I love to work with the people. I love to teach the children. I love to be here. I just started to teach at ALI. That's the OSHA Lifelong Learning Institute right here at the university for retirees. I'm giving a 4 seminars on Introduction to Judaism and also 1 seminar on Fundamentals of Music, by the way. And that's, I already finished the Jewish, and this week I'm actually doing the Fundamentals of Music. So it's very challenging, but it's very rewarding.
Is there one thing that you would say that I find to be the most delightful thing that was about being a rabbi? Is there one thing you could point to?
No. I mean, it's really a variety. It's working with this.
So it's the whole montage.
It's a whole thing. It's a text. It's the tradition. It's the people. I love Hattiesburg. The community is wonderful. My congregation is fabulous. And really, it's a good combination. And I learned a lot about life in the South because this is actually the 5th state that I lived in. You know, counting Minnesota, I was 5 years in Illinois, 20 in Montana, 3 in Ohio, and then
you know what you're saying tells me that there's a great similarity between what Christian pastors find, at least the Christian pastors that I know, and rabbis, and that what they'll tell you, you know, it's the life of the people. It's being with them in the most serious moments of their life, birth and death, marriage, different transition points. Right. It's that makes it so rewarding. And I hear you basically saying it's the same thing for the rabbi.
It's absolutely so. Eventually, it is really, it's really that, because you're serving people.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time. We're going to have you back.
All right.
However, because it's been wonderful.
Thank you.
And
same here.
I would love to have you back. And all I want to say now, until next time, this is Dr. Alan Eichelman. When we come back to you next time, as a matter of faith.
This has been As a Matter of Faith, produced in the studios of WUSM at the University of Southern Mississippi with the support of the College of Arts and Letters, the School of Mass Communication and Journalism, and the Department of Philosophy and Religion. Your host for As a Matter of Faith, Dr. Alan Eichelman. Producer, Jeff Rossier. Please share your comments and suggestions by emailing us at wusm@usm.edu.